Hey, everybody. Welcome back to One Club Shorts podcast. We are basically 2 weeks removed from the U.S. Open. We just had the Travelers last week and some great golf going around. We're mid-season for ourselves, getting ready for three back-to-back-to-back events for One Club Short. So we're in the thralls of it, and it's a great time to be a golfing fan, be a golfer in general. Actually, the match is going on right now too, I think, which I haven't watched. I just got off a plane, but you could just tell the sport is in full motion, and it's great to see, because it's the best time of year for us, and all the other sports kind of take a back seat this time of year for golf. We've got one major left, so there's a lot to talk about. We apologize for missing last week. It's just we were all over the map and just couldn't get it together as far as our schedule. So we'll hit a little bit on the U.S. Open today. We won't bore everybody because we know it's a week removed, but some of the storylines are still pretty relevant, especially one of the ones that we love to talk about, and it's having our boy Ricky back in the mix pretty much week in and week out nowadays. Not running away with it, but I don't know if there's a golf fan in the world that doesn't want to see Ricky Fowler succeed in the best way. We'll touch on that and a bunch of other topics that Will's already kind of drummed up for us. So where do you want to start, bud?
I mean, I think let's not let this sit until the end of the podcast this week. Talk to us about dates and courses. There are a lot of opportunities that people have coming up to see what One Club Short has to offer. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the headline here.
Yeah, so we strategically moved our June event to August. But what that does for our schedule coming up is pretty much going back to back to back. So it's every 2 weeks we're going to have an event. Starting July 17th, we're going to be at Belport Golf Club in Long Island. We are going to Edgewood Country Club on July 31st. That's in New Jersey, and then Rock Rim and Country Club in Stamford, Connecticut. So all awesome spots. They're all so different. But to be honest, a lot of them have gotten redone over the last couple of years, but they've got some great architecture behind them. And they all show differently. Like Belport's got 9 beautiful holes on the water. Edgewood is just a great country club that everyone you talk to about this course just raves about it. So between the food, the atmosphere, the clubhouse, the golf, these things are going to be back to back to back great events. So get in there, get involved, come play. We love to see you. We're working on some pretty cool tee gifts as well. Our sponsors are giving us awesome prizes for the, all the different stuff that you're going to win throughout the event. So just come out. Once you do one, you're going to be hooked. We're really creating this cool little ecosystem of folks that are seeing each other now at multiple events. They're exchanging business cards. They're helping each other out with work. They're promoting each other's brands. It's kind of a really cool thing to see. So our community is getting stronger. Our social presence is growing, not as fast as we'd ever like, but it's doing really well if you look at it big picture wise, because our fans are so engaged. So, man, I'm just pumped. I just can't thank everybody enough for all the support we've gotten. We're rolling and loving it. So more to come.
Love it. So, I mean, I think, we're a couple of weeks removed from it almost now, but can't gloss over the U.S. Open. I think there are two main headlines aside from, Wyndham Clark cementing himself with another huge win this year. I think there are two main storylines that we ought to cover. The first is the golf course. What a roller coaster of a week for multiple guys to go out and shoot 62 on Thursday. And then, for many people to struggle to break par after that. I mean, this is a course that allowed multiple 62s on Thursday and also got an 81 out of Justin Thomas. Glenn, maybe you can shed some light on this. I was shocked. I was jokingly asking the question on Twitter after Thursday's round of is the US Open going to be won at a lower score than the Travelers Championship? And ultimately it wasn't, and I think we would be in a really weird position if it had been. But you know, what was your read on the course? What was your read on how it evolved over the course of the weekend? What was, you know, what was your reaction to these massive driving areas and these incredibly punishing areas around the greens that we saw almost put Wyndham Clark in a bunch of trouble on Sunday? How do you explain through the lens of the course what we saw play out in those 4 days?
Well, first of all, everyone overreacted, obviously, to the first 262s. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. It's gonna take, you know, 28 under. No, it's still the US Open. Yeah. We knew if that marine layer hung around, and it did, you know, for a while, that course would be soft. And you and I talked about it before the US Open. It doesn't matter how, if these guys are going in with three woods into these greens, it doesn't matter what they're hitting. If the greens are sticking, they can hit anything. They can hit anything tight, and they did. The problem probably was, given the soft conditions, the fairways were kept way too wide. It was just too easy off the tee. They tried to counter that with a couple of, you know, par threes that played over 275 each day. It wasn't enough. You can't give those guys a big target in the soft conditions. They'll just eat it up. And, you know, they did.
I've never been on a text chain with the term marine layer so much in my entire life. Apparently it causes the ball to go further, shorter, sticky greens, fast greens. It's probably my new favorite term of all time.
I think it was the only term used more than Barranca over the course of that tournament.
Yeah.
I felt bad for the course, to be honest with you. I, not that I'm attached to it in any way, shape, or form, but I know how stressful it is to be that course where you're like, oh man, this is our one time to shine. You know, if you have four great days, you get put on the map for, you know, as this historical place that they always want to come back to and everything else. But if it doesn't show well for whatever reason, and the players turn against it, man, you don't get that invite back for a long, long time. So, you know, I understand where some of the frustration was coming from as far as not being so fan friendly. There was nowhere for people to go and watch. You know, the players always seem to be pissed about something, but you know, I did feel for them at one point, just being like, man, this kind of sucks. Like if you really, you get that invite, you wait 10 years to put it on. Glenn, you know, it's just like any Olympic too, right? Like, yeah, that city is waiting forever to, you know, get these games. And if it doesn't shine in that one time, oh God, it's gotta be so frustrating. So I did feel for him a little bit.
Yeah, the other thing, it had no atmosphere because they had to limit the fans so much because there were so many choke points on that golf course that you couldn't get people like ass numbers around. And I think it really suffered from that. I don't think that the fans, you know, the players felt that usual US Open energy, that excitement of, you know, playing in these amphitheaters as you're coming up, especially the last few holes. It was all kind of lost. I felt bad for them. I felt bad for everybody. I felt bad for the broadcast. I felt bad for the players. I felt bad for the USGA. I felt bad for the LA Country Club because it didn't, you know, it might be a quirky course, but it's a good golf course.
And I mean, with the exception of Tommy Fleetwood, who of course shot 63 on the last day to play himself into another non-competitive top five in a major that will trick me into picking him in another one. You know, there weren't guys who were really in contention who went super low, honestly, after Thursday, really. And, you know, that group is headlined by Ricky Fowler and his five over weekend. I think, you know, I want to talk about Ricky Fowler, how excited we all were that he was in contention. Of course, you know, even par would have put him in a playoff, so that was disappointing. I think we also have to talk about Rory McIlroy. You know, a very different path than Ricky took to end up where he did, but you look back at particularly the Sunday at the British Open last year, where, you know, sure, Cam played incredibly, but Rory makes a couple birdies, that might turn out differently. And then you look at the 70 that he shot on Sunday at LACC. Like, at what point is it a trend? And I think it's interesting to juxtapose that with Ricky, because I think Ricky showing up contending for 3 days and registering a T5 in a major, coming from where he's come from in the last couple of years, is a resounding victory. Even though it didn't go the way we wanted it to go on Sunday, it's so the opposite of what Rory did by notching this second place that just feels like another second place for him. Craig, obviously you were excited about Ricky. What's your reaction to both of those guys and the way the tournament wrapped up for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. It's, you know, for Ricky, I don't think he choked as much as just, it's hard to put four really good days together consistently, right? And I think that last day he just ran out of steam a little bit. But I think he's got a lot less pressure on him to win than Rory does. Because Rory, time and time again, is considered the best player in the world, or in that, you know, storyline almost all the time, right? Is, oh, his best swing, he's this and he's that. He's the face of the league. And time and time again, I think he's feeling like he's got, you know, a 1,000 pounds on his back every time he's got to, you know, finish those last nine holes of a major event. It's just, I don't know. I was obviously rooting for Rory. I'm never rooting against Rory, but, you know, if Ricky wins, it's just, to me, it's just, man, this guy deserves it so much. If Rory wins, it's like, all right, great. It's just well overdue. And it's probably shitty to say, to be honest with you, but it's, for me, I just feel like Rory's always been in this conversation. I think he's feeling that pressure. Everything gets so much tighter when it comes down to, am I finally going to be back on this mantle? So I don't know. They're just two different stages of their career, but you know, you shouldn't be surprised to be the one who wins it, because they're such good golfers. But I just think Ricky is so confident in his swing right now. He's always, every week he seems to be getting better and better and better as far as that confidence level goes. So I think we're going to see some great stuff from Ricky in the next, you know, for the remainder of this season and coming in hot starting next season too.
Yeah, so it's so good to see Ricky play well. We're a little shocked, like, by far that 75 was the highest round of like the contenders. By far. So it was a little shocking. Like Craig said, he probably ran out of steam. Plus he hasn't been in that position in a while, but you know, I hate to sound stupid, but I'm almost happy that Rory didn't win, because after all he's been through in the past couple of weeks, if he won, all we'd be talking about right now is that drop that he got in the embedded ball.
Oh my gosh.
He didn't get up and down, and it was the official gave him the wrong drop. He probably should have been like Dorf on golf, standing in the bunker, choked down the steel. Instead, he had a perfectly flat lie. Still shocked he didn't get that up and down. But I mean, if he finally broke through again at a major after all he's been through, and we're talking about, wow, you probably shouldn't have gotten that drop. I don't know. he might have jumped off of one of the bridges in Dublin, you know?
They wouldn't go back. They can't go back and change something now, right? I mean, they do some crazy stuff. Yeah, you can't go back a week and a half and change.
Not after the tournament's over. Like, people, like, you know, they used to allow callers to call in, like Lexi Thompson, with that stupid ruling that when that person,
so bad,
once the tournament's done and in the books, they can't do it. That they could do it because there was still another round to play. They could, after the round was over, oh, by the way, you're getting two stroke, or a couple holes later, by the way, you're getting a 2-stroke penalty. And then, you know,
but once it's done and they've handed out the money,
they can't go back. I mean, it wasn't at the end of the day, it's not Rory's fault. It's the official's fault for not knowing where that one club length should have been taken from.
But yeah, the only place it could have gone would be back into the bunker, right?
Yeah, yeah. It just would have been, instead of having the club up where he had a flat lie, the club would have probably been down a little bit further and down, so that he probably would have been like half in the bunker or half out. Like, because it was so far to the lip, he wouldn't have been. I mean, he had a clean shot. I'm still trying to get up and down. That drop was, you know, we'd have to go back there and measure it correctly just to see how tough of a lie it would be. At the end of the day, he didn't get it up and down, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, you should have seen where I would have.
Lie situation, I think.
If that was me, you would have, you should see where I would have dropped that sucker. Right in the fairway. All right, what do I do? Over my shoulder? Are we back to doing that? Yep.
Perfect. One thing that sticks out for Ricky in the stats is he gained almost 5 shots putting on Thursday. He was positive as a putter on Friday, and he lost shots on both days on the weekend. Additionally, drove the ball well in round one and round two. He was negative on the weekend. It just felt like, you know, Craig, as you were saying, it can be hard to put 4 good days together. And, you know, had some missed opportunities. I think the final round went a lot worse than any of us would have expected. But, yeah,
I'm not going to lie.
The putter really let him down on the last couple of days.
Well, I turned it off. Like once I was so excited for him to be in the hunt with 4 holes left when it was really starting to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I don't know. I just didn't want to see it. Like I was so, like, yeah. I was so disappointed. My son wanted to go out and have a football catch. And I'm like, oh no, I want to watch. I didn't really get a chance to watch as much of the Open as I wanted. I was so excited to watch Ricky in these final holes. Once I watched 3 of those holes and it was starting to like little by little fall apart, I'm like, you know what? I stopped the recording because I didn't want to go back to it. I turned the TV off and went out and we had a catch. So I didn't even watch the final, you know, couple holes. It was kind of frustrating because I just wanted him to win so bad, but
yeah,
what are you going to do?
You know, there were 2 winners though of that Open, Wyndham Clark, of course, but the second winner was Callaway with the Odyssey, that jailbreak putter.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that Wyndham Clark and Ricky playing, and now Keegan's been playing for a few years. I was like, man, they are going to, you know, they're going to sell out. And all of a sudden they don't make that model. And now they just re-released it on Tuesday. I'm sure it's probably sold out already. In the 17-inch Super Stroke putter grip, those are sold out. You can't get them. You can't go, you know. I was looking online because I was just so curious what does to the average golfer's like, oh, yeah, I can shoot 62 if I have the jailbreak putter. And good for Callaway. They're going to make a ton of money.
Absolutely. Good for them. And good for Callaway athletes for going out and winning some tournaments. The bread's getting buttered on both sides there.
It was cool to hear too how much they talked about the mental side of it. Like, you know, they asked him after their because he had nerves of steel, right? Walking in that final 9, he had some bad shots. He rebounded pretty, you know, good from it. He just was always in it. And they asked him. They said, you know, hearing Ricky's name all over the place, how did you handle that? And he said, well, my mental coach just told me about, like, when you hear something that's a distraction, get focused on, like, no, this is yours, like, get in it. And I was thinking, I was like, man, I wonder how many, I bet you all these golfers now have mental coaches, right? It's almost like I got the physical side of it, I've got the mental side of golf itself, and then I've got the mental side of how do I keep me in this round and not, I mean, it's such an easy sport to give up on yourself if you have a couple bad swings and whatever. But
yeah, I think the refrain was get cocky, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Play cocky. See, yeah. I say get cocky and Glenn, watch this. I'm going to swing out of my shoes. And I inherently go wide right out of bounds every time I say that. But it's like, I mean it so bad. I'm like, I'm going to swing so hard at this thing. And I know I got this. I feel good. And every time I do that, wide right.
Yeah, that was
too soon.
Sorry.
Jesus.
I got out and played 9 holes at this like 2,800 yard par 34 public course out here. I tried to get cocky, and you know what? I'd say I pulled it off. I shot 36, and I'm not going to give anyone else all the details about how easy the course was when I tell them about it. You know, for all they know, I was at LACC shooting 36. That's how I'm getting cocky about my golf game. So thank you, Wyndham Clark, and your mental coach for that note. I'm sure that I'm applying it correctly. Travelers Championship is one of my favorite tournaments of the year. Not only, you know, being from the area, having worked at the first tee that's down there, which is, you know, good group of people. It's just so much fun. Great tournament to attend, you know, Glenn, as you've mentioned a number of times. Good course, interesting course, challenging enough, but plenty of scoring opportunities. Those last few holes, 15 to 18 are an absolute roller coaster. It wasn't as competitive down the stretch as some that we've seen in the past at River Highlands, which are always exciting. But it was a home game for Keegan Bradley to an extent, and he went out and took it. And there's a guy who might be playing himself into a Ryder Cup spot. Glenn, what were your reactions to the way things played out at the Travelers?
I like Keegan. He's a competitor. He's fiery. He's twitchy. That's a little crazy, but it was great. Another one, they're getting a little bit of a black eye this week, but again, it's another big ballpark. The fairways are huge, the wide, the greens are gigantic. And as you, Craig, know, like in the Northeast, it's been soft. We've had rain. The temperatures have been cool. We really haven't had many hot. We had no hot, dry days. So I felt sorry for the course. Again, doesn't matter what club these guys have in the hands. If the conditions are soft, they're going to stick it. And these guys just stuck it. A little bit of an overreaction in the media to, is it obsolete? No, it's not. It's also fun to see birdies, especially after US Open week. We want to see birdies again. The course has just taken a beating just because it's for these guys in wet and not even wet conditions, just damp conditions. It's just easy. It's just big. There's not a lot of places you can get in trouble at the Travelers until you get to the last couple holes, but you don't see a lot of guys other than 15 going for it. You don't see a lot of guys put it in the water on, 16, 17. They can manage that. The fairways are generous. The greens are gigantic, like I said, but it's still a great event in an area that really turns out and really supports it. So everybody back off the Travelers, man.
And I want to make something very clear. The PGA Tour routinely has events in its playoff circuit. I'm specifically thinking of the one in Boston that are won at 30 under par.
Yep.
30 under par. And people watch the US Open and they go, oh, this is how golf's supposed to be played. And then they go to the Travelers, which is at, it's at a TPC course and those are built for scoring.
Yeah.
Generally, and a bunch of guys shoot 18 to 23 under and people freak out, and I will not have the good name of the Travelers Championship dragged through the mud by these people who have this arbitrary aesthetic preference for how golf should be played. It's a good tournament at a good course. It routinely produces good action and good champions, and I am often in favor of free speech and debate, and I don't feel that way about this.
I'm with you, Will. Back off the Travelers, man. I love that event.
I was like to see Bradley play so well. He comes across as such a good guy. He's so likable. The fact that that he stole the trophy and went out drinking with it, where he said something to the effect of, I was supposed to give this one back. This is the real one that stays in the case. And the next picture you see him chugging a beer out of it.
Awesome.
It's great. I think people golf still needs that fiery personality every once in a while, right? For every golfer that seems kind of dull or just, can't get out of their own way because they seem robotic, you need a guy like Keegan Bradley to kind of shake it up a little bit every now and again. So I was happy to see him walk away with this thing, and pretty handedly too. Like, he needed that kick,
And how about a guy who was coming off a miscut, who hadn't finished better than tied 23rd since a T10 at the Arnold Palmer in March, a guy who missed the cut at the Players, was outside the top 20 at the Masters, was outside the top 20
big intro
PGA. Like, that's, he against what was a very good field, having not played really good competitive golf in a little while. To go out and really take it was impressive, and it was not on my radar.
Yeah. No, that was a good field. I mean, an elevated event. You had everybody, you know, Fowler, Thomas, McIlroy, Cantlay, all the players that are playing well were there, and he went out and just, you know, shot lights out. I mean, hats off to him. Hopefully, I really want him to make the Ryder Cup team, because this team's going to need a little fire.
Yeah, so that's a good transition here. So right now, the automatic qualifiers for the Ryder Cup team for the U.S. would be Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Brooks Koepka, Xander, Cantlay, and Homa. After Scotty and Wyndham Clark, the list gets very compressed. It's something like, you know, Koepka is 4,000 points behind Clark, who is 12,000 points behind Scotty, and the gap between Brooks and, you know, 12th place is 3,000 points. So there's a very compressed group here, and that's where you find Keegan 7th, Spieth 8, Cam Young, Sam Burns, JT, Morikawa. I don't know that there's anyone outside the top 12 who I really expect to be on the team. You know, Will Zalatoris would be an exciting one if he were healthy. Tony Finau, I think, has a case. Ricky Fowler is building a case. Sahith Tagala has, you know, potentially an interesting case, and you never know what they'll do with Dustin Johnson. But Craig, as you think about the way this U.S. Ryder Cup team shapes up, is there anyone aside from those top six that I mentioned, Homa, Cantlay, Xander, Brooks, Wyndham Clark, and Scotty, that you're pounding the table absolutely needs to be there?
No, I think from that point on, you got to go with the hot hand. Like, I never would have said Keegan Bradley 3 weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. But if he now follows this up with another good event, or Fowler continues to be in the conversation, you got to go with the hot hand, because golf's such a funny sport. You can't just throw Morikawa and JT in. Like, they're really struggling. JT, I know, played better than the Travelers, but in general, you know, he's got some stuff going on with his game right now. As you'd think he'd be a shoo-in. After watching the last Ryder Cup, that team looked invincible for the next decade, right? Mm-hmm. But some of those folks now they're dealing with some injuries, they're dealing with a little bit of swing issues. I think you just got to go with the hot hand at that point, because the European team looks, I was looking at it too, the European team looks super strong, right? Like, when you throw Rahm and some of these other guys in there, at least the top five or six, it's going to be a battle where all of a sudden some of their youth movement is starting to really come up in the ranks and starting to play better.
Yeah, I wonder about the depth of the Europe team. You got Rahm and Rory, and that's exciting. And then, you know, we obviously have to factor in, the U.S. doesn't win the Ryder Cup in Europe. They don't do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who knows, maybe you get by with Victor Perez and Jorge Campillo and, you know, Rasmus Højgaard and whoever else is going to make this team. But I agree, Craig, it, you know, there's the U.S. doesn't win the Ryder Cup in Europe. The U.S. feels like they should be absolutely dominant. I think, to your hot hand comment, though, I feel like that's going to be on their minds, because Scottie Scheffler was no shoe-in for the 2021 Ryder Cup team. He goes out, goes 2-0-1, part of just the, you know, the dominant run at Whistling Straits. You know, there are some guys, whether it's Spieth, whether it's JT, whether it's Morikawa, whether it's Dustin Johnson, whether it's Ricky, whether it's Finau, who, you know, it kind of feels like if you were doing a draft and you didn't have these rankings in front of you, you'd put on the team. But, you know, course fit aside, because we can never predict that stuff with the Ryder Cup, it does feel like the hot hand is going to be the right approach.
Yeah, because I feel like, and Glenn, you know this better than anybody, you're more of a historian. I feel like in years past, there's always been the old guard of saying, always got to take Phil. Always got to take, like, there was just a list of names, regardless of where they stood, that the U.S. team kept time and time and again throwing them, you know, into the, in, into the mix and ignoring almost a big part of the youth movement and the hot hand. And we'd get hammered time and time again because there was no chemistry. There was no camaraderie. It was just a bunch of players out there for themselves. And it just didn't ever work out for us, where the Europeans would take the hot hand and they'd spend some time together. They'd travel together. Like they looked like a team, where we looked like a bunch of individuals, and we got our butts kicked time and time again. This last group from Whistling Straits seemed to get over that hurdle in a lot of different ways, right? They seemed to get along, they're chugging beers and smoking cigars together, and they just dominated. Don't get away from that, right? Like, you finally figured out, here's your core, and now let's figure out who the next, you know, couple hot hands are.
Yeah, but you're missing some people from Whistling Straits too, because of Liv, like DJ and Reed, who really added to that team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2 months ago, I'd have said Zach Johnson has the easiest job in the world. Take the top 12. That you can't argue it. But right now I'm looking at, yes, the top six, great. Jordan Spieth, Cameron Young, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa. You can make a case that they shouldn't be on right now because of their play. And then you look outside that top 12 and you got Fowler, Harris English, Finau, Sahith Theegala, Brian Harman's playing great. I mean, these guys now have to, you know, a couple of weeks ago, these guys weren't in the conversation. Now I think they have to be. You got some guys up there struggling. I think all of a sudden, I thought this was going to be an easy Ryder Cup for the United States. We're going to go back and, you know, finally win the cup on foreign soil. I think Zach Johnson's going to have, you know, I thought he had the easiest job in the world 6 weeks ago. Now I think he's got one of the hardest. He's going to have to make some hard decisions. I don't think he can take Cam Young, even though he's nine. And here he had last year. Justin Thomas, probably going to take him, but does he deserve the spot? I mean, he's got some issues. So does Colin Morikawa. So, you know, and like you said, Will Zalatoris is out because of injury, but there's some interesting names up to, like, you know, 2020 or so that you could make a case for everybody up to, like, Brian Harman at 21.
So Glenn, we'll come back to this, obviously, you know, once the PGA Tour season wraps up, but if there's one key to the U.S. winning a Ryder Cup in Europe for the first time in, what, 30 years? What is it? If you know, we're wrapping up Ryder Cup week and the U.S. has retained, it's because they did what well?
Someone came out of nowhere and fired up a team on a team. When you look at it right now, and there's no one to fire up a team.
Mm-hmm.
Got to find that Ian Poulter, that Sergio Garcia, that Seve Ballesteros that the Europeans have been so good at. Someone that, you know, goes in there and waves the flag and rah-rahs and gets the guys to believe. I don't see a vocal leader, a strong personality, other than Max Homa, but I don't know if that strong personality translates into, like, rallying a team. I think Keegan Bradley could be that voice. Other than that, I'm looking at a lot of, like, just kind of like nice guys that play good golf. And I think you're going to need someone to go in there. You're going into hostile territory. There's going to be a lot of ole, ole, oles. You know, that's it. And you're going to be surrounded by heckling. You have to have a thick skin, but you have to have someone to believe in. And, you know, even Zach Johnson, nice guy, great player. He's not a rah-rah guy. You're going to have to find somebody like Patrick Reed, you know, get under the skin of the crowd, and your teammates are like, yeah, look at him. He's getting under the skin of the crowd. There's no Patrick Reed this year, obviously. Who is that? Who is that leader? They're going to need someone to step up. And I don't know who that is right now.
Guess they could pick Patrick Reed.
Yeah, I think so. Now that then with the, you can pick DJ.
Yeah, I guess so.
Another good player. But you're going to need someone to go in there who has the guts to piss off the European fans.
Yeah. So on the topic of nice guys who play good golf, I think that's probably the most concise way I would describe Patrick Cantlay if I had to talk about my impression of him. But the other day in Golf Week, Eamon Lynch delivered a very different one. He painted Cantlay in an opinion piece as being the architect of a, quote, artless coup to keep the PGA Tour deal with the PIF, which, you know, is the group that runs Liv, from going through and Lynch's explanation for why Cantlay, who's a member of the PGA Tour Policy Board, would do this is because it would allow Cantlay to continue playing the organizations against one another to maximize the amount of money he can get from one or the other. Certain members of the PGA Tour, including Ricky Fowler, Adam Scott, Justin Thomas today, and in recent days, all came out and were like, dude, you know, relax, basically, in response to Lynch's piece. You know, there are, they called him out for making personal attacks and for, you know, commenting on it in a way that they perceive to be cheap shots and speculative, in their words. It's been weird, I would say. You know, Eamon Lynch has not made it a secret how he feels about the PGA Tour Live Golf situation. This is definitely a different angle than he's taken in the past to suggest that someone is out there, you know, trying to keep the division going, you know, to pursue personal benefit. And, you know, he's already been called out by people who know a lot more than we do for, you know, potentially not having all the facts on his side. But, you know, we talked about this merger as a potential end to a lot of the drama that's in the game of golf. But at least this week, Eamon Lynch has managed to keep that drama going. Glenn, I'll go to you first for just how you see this whole weird, you know, I don't even know what to call it. It's just this situation having played out. What's your read on this?
I mean, I don't get it. I know Eamon, you know, like you said, he hates Liv, and maybe he's like, you know, over the past year, people paid a lot of attention to what he had to say, and now all of a sudden that juice is gone. So maybe he's this little bit of a cry for attention. I don't know, but I think Cantlay's one of those guys, you know, he turned down probably 75 to 100 million to jump. He's got to be pissed. And the two guys, you know, Ricky Fowler, Adam Scott, probably both turned down 75 to 100 million to jump. They're pissed. So it's an interesting thing. I think it's just a way to keep publicity going and attention on some people that need attention. It's a lot to do about nothing in my eyes, but we'll see where it shakes. But I think, you know, this is one of those things. It was a good Twitter day, and then we won't be talking about it as of 6 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I feel like this is an article that just didn't need to be written. I mean, it just, unless you're sitting down with Cantlay and you're asking him pointed questions and he's giving you pointed answers, like, no, this is why I feel this should happen. And this is, you know, and he puts it all out there. Otherwise, all these things are a tremendous leap of faith, right? Mm-hmm. So, and to throw all this into one article against one person, man, it just seems silly. And I just feel like this is just another one of those things, almost like being a shock jock, right? It's like, you know, what are you really getting out of this? You know, are you trying to ruin his credibility? You're trying to, you know, I don't know. And just, I feel like Cantlay is such a weird target. Yeah, he's probably pissed, like I said, but of all the people to pick on, you hear Cantlay say six words all year. Like, and now all of a sudden he's like this guy behind the scenes pulling strings. And I just don't get it.
Yep. Easy target.
And of course,
he knows he won't fight back.
Yeah.
After this guy.
Yeah. And of course, the article comes out on the 24th, which was Sunday, with the expectation or hope that after the policy board meeting on Tuesday, actual facts would come out suggesting that Patrick Cantlay is really doing this and really has these motivations and is really trying to, you know, hold up the deal for, you know, so he can get $100 million or whatever the allegation is. And that didn't happen. So it did feel a little bit like the guys who came out today and were like, you know, we don't support this. We're just a little bit taking an opportunity to dunk on Eamon Lynch for writing this article. But, you know, just what a weird, it was not, you know, if you told me that someone in the golf media was going to come after a PGA Tour player for that tour player not wanting Liv to become part of the PGA Tour ecosystem, and those are just the facts you told me, I would not have expected that Eamon Lynch would be that guy. But I guess when you get down in the to the particulars of, you know, the alleged motivations and things like that, you can understand it a little better.
No one had Eamon Lynch Patrick Cantlay feud on their 2023 bingo card.
Exactly. I didn't have a Patrick Cantlay feud on my bingo card at all. Yeah, exactly. Except maybe with, like, you know, if they run out of black slacks, that may be a problem for him.
I mean, I feel like if they wrote this article about Rory, you'd be like, yeah, I get it. Because, man, Rory had to stick his neck out all season. I think it did infect his golf game more than anybody else, because he was the spokesperson that was put on that hill to take the beating, you know, week in and week out. I could see him, out of all the people that are involved in this whole thing, I could see Rory being the most pissed. I don't know if he is or isn't. I would just look at that article and be like, if I didn't read the name, and it was like a Mad Libs, and you got to add the name of, you know, who is this person, I'd be like, oh man, Rory makes a lot of sense. I'd be pissed if I was Rory, because I feel like he was hung out to dry more than anybody in this whole process. But again, if you're asking who's pissed about this deal going through, there's probably a list of 20 of the top, you know, 50 players in the PGA that are super pissed because they turned down money for no apparent reason now.
You just put me in a little PTSD, because I got in trouble in fifth grade. Me and my friends, we did dirty Mad Libs, and our teacher caught us and had to bring it home and have my mom sign it.
All right. We're
getting into these big boobs that you're in.
Yeah. Actually, I tricked my mom. I folded it up and I said, Mom, let me see your autograph. And she signed it. Oh, that's you have such a nice handwriting. I took it. And she's like, wait, what was that? And I ran out the door.
So you did a Mad Lib on your mom?
Yeah. These were dirty Mad Libs.
Oh,
the mind is a scary place in fifth grade.
We're in admission of guilt portion of the podcast. Glenn, I know you've been busy. You gotten out on the golf course at all?
I'm basically playing the 9-hole ladies league schedule, but I did get...
Okay.
We were out in California last week. My daughter's in water polo camp, and I played Trump National Los Angeles, which was the most I've spent on a round of golf, but it was unbelievable. The first hole goes up a hill and you're going away from the ocean. Then it's just zigzagging and you're just looking west and it's just the ocean. You're looking north, the waves crashing on cliffs. It was one of the most spectacular pieces of property I've ever seen. And it was one of those things where, yeah, I just spent a ton of money, but it was worth every penny. And I was looking at even the driving range, you're hitting balls and the Pacific Ocean is just right there a few hundred yards. It's like this driving range has to be worth $200 million. It's just insane. It was insanely good. Hard golf course, you know, I shot 84, but it's one of those where we're still on the team. We just didn't know where to hit it. It's one of those where it's fairway, 10 feet, 10 yards of rough, maybe, and then environmentally sensitive area. So it was really demanding, like the wind is whipping off the Pacific. But it, you know, I would, if anyone's out there and down in the Long Beach area, then I would highly recommend it. It's worth the price of admission. It was one of the most spectacular golf courses. I mean, probably the most spectacular piece of property I've ever played golf on.
That's pretty sweet. Craig, what about you?
We just had our member guest at Wingfoot last weekend. First day I played lights out. Probably the best I've ever played. I shot out of my first two 9-hole matches, I shot a 75. Lowest on the West course, lowest score I've ever had there. I felt great. Third match I played okay, and then came crashing back down to reality day two, mid-80s. But it's such a fun weekend. My partner, Chip, is from Vineyard Vines, one of our sponsors and a dear friend. He played awesome. It was just such a, you know, you meet so many cool people on these things, you know, from all walks of life. The course played awesome and super hard. Like the greens were like lightning fast. And then this morning I was down in DC. I was down with our good friends from the Washington area. We played Robert Trent Jones with Dan Gavula and some friends, and it was awesome. Such a pretty course, probably one of my favorite courses that I played. It's, you know, you've got a bunch of holes on the water. It's super scenic. It's, you know, it plays long on some holes. It was a lot of fun. I did not play great by any means, but it was a really good time. So,
you know, Craig, I was going to say it's weird that I wasn't your guest in the member guest, but I understand it was a business thing. It was a sponsor thing.
You didn't know you're coming off of 36.
Yeah. I mean, hey, who knows? Who knows what I could have done for you?
I was worried, well, if you were my partner with after that 36, we would have been in such a high flight, it would have been too much. So
I think that 36 is like it puts me trending at like a 12 handicap or something with the rating on that course. So you don't worry about that. But on the topic of golf in this area being the Mid-Atlantic, One Club Short is not going to Robert Trent Jones, but we are coming to Woodholme in Baltimore in September.
September 11th. Yep. Monday, there September 11th. Again, super excited. It's probably, I want to say, an hour and a half outside of Baltimore. But the not course even. Is awesome. We talked to the head pro there the other day, and it's playing great. It's going to show really well. And it's a course too that is kind of this hidden gem. Everyone that's played it absolutely loves it, but there's still a lot of people that just don't know about it yet. And that's one of the cool things too about these events, is not just getting you on great golf courses, but bringing awareness to the course that deserves more recognition than it's getting, which is kind of what we look for. I mean, it's the big names are the big names, and we'll start to add more of those as we mature. But for now, man, we love finding these hidden gems, and I would say Woodholme is right on that list. So,
yeah, I mean, it's very, you know, the DC area, this area of the Mid-Atlantic is very much like the Northeast and Long Island, in the sense that there's such a high concentration of great golf courses. And, you know, we all know the ones that we hear about, whether, you know, up north, you know, you have your Shinnecock and your Winged Foot and, you know, all of those. And down here, we have Baltimore Country Club, and we have Congressional, and we have RTJ. But I think, you know, what the two of you have done such a good job with One Club Short. And I think what we continue to hear at One Club Short is you're doing just an awesome job of finding these courses that maybe people don't know about. People certainly wouldn't be getting on otherwise, that are just phenomenal golf courses that are, you know, great examples of what good golf in the area looks like. And I think, you know, just as Belport and Rock Rimmon and the rest of the courses we've done up north have been, that's very much what Woodholme is to golf down here. So, you know, for anyone who is thinking about a One Club Short event, but, you know, a little farther south of a lot of the ones that we've held to this point, that Woodholme one is going to be quite a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's cool for us too to dip our toes in a new area, right? We've been pretty concentrated on the tri-state area. This is just home for us, so it's easy. But every year we're going to try and get into new territory. You know, the Carolinas. We've talked about Georgia. We've talked about Florida, and then, you know, getting into Maryland has always been kind of the logical next step. That in the Philly area. So I think it's a great one to start. And I think people are really going to be, you know, surprised how good this course is.
Yeah, it'll be a ton of fun. All right, Glenn, any parting shots from you before we wrap up here?
No, I'm surprised you haven't talked about last night's no hitter. Perfect game.
Look, you know, I have an entirely different podcast for that, but shout out to Domingo Germán, through the 24th perfect game in Major League Baseball history, the fourth perfect game by a Yankee, third in the regular season. If you do it against potentially the worst team in baseball history, does it count? I don't know. I have a friend who's very protective of perfect games due to an obsession with Mark Burley, and he insists it doesn't count. But they're not the worst offense in the league, the A's. They're just the worst at everything else. So that was pretty cool. But I have an entirely different podcast to talk about that on.
Correct. If you hit a rock and it ends up being a hole in one, still count as a hole in one, bro. I mean, it's just
absolutely
probably your best swing of the day, but count that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Ain't no doubt.
We're right around the corner with Belport, so we're looking forward to seeing everybody there. We've got a couple slots left, so make sure you hurry up and sign up before it totally fills up. And see you soon.
All right. So as always, people can find all the information about everything we're doing at One Club Short at oneclubshort.com, whether that's dates, courses, registration, membership. Next best place to find us, Instagram, where we are at One Club Short, super active on there. Lots of fun content on Twitter. We are at One Club Short. And then the number one podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, with video on Spotify. And of course, the videos also go up on YouTube, where we are at One Club Short Pod. Rocket Mortgage is already underway up in Michigan. So we'll be back same time, same place ish next week to talk about that. Everyone enjoy your 4th of July, and we'll be back next week. Thanks everyone for listening.